Welcome to Manager Tools. Feedback dialogue is stupid guidance. Part 4. This cast answers these questions. Should I have a dialogue with my directs when giving feedback? Does having a dialogue help performance? Does having a dialogue improve my ability to give feedback? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Folks, we're running a virtual effective hiring manager conference coming up March 30th and 31st. In just about 2 weeks, our virtual effective hiring manager conferences tend to sell out pretty quickly because we don't do them as often as we do our effective manager conference. It's quite intensive. We're going to go through everything from screening resumes and documents and social media and phone screens all the way through to how to schedule Zoom interviews and how to interview over Zoom. And how to prepare questions and how to ask questions and how to listen to answers and how to make decisions and how to offer and how to decline and how to follow up and even how to onboard. Strongly recommend it. One of my favorite trainings that we deliver. Virtual Effective Hiring Manager Conference, March 30th and 31st. Hope to see you there.
Okay, Mark, we're near the finish line. We're getting
yes,
there.
Yes, I promise.
Yeah, we've heard that before. We've talked about feedback, quote-unquote, conversations are misguided, and we described why.
Right.
We talked about the data we have to support that feedback discussions are not good, don't work, and it's not supported by the data. We talked about intent. This is a big one, that discussions about intent are worthless. And our next point is we're going to talk about what has already happened. Those kind of discussions are not good as well.
Yeah, look, I think if you sit down to talk to one of your directs about what has already happened, and go over why they did it, and understand the rationale and so on, you're essentially talking about the past. Now, I don't think anybody would argue, I've never heard anybody argue, that intent or that idea that they have and going over what has already happened is designed to get to the future. Some people don't quite realize it. And there are a number of those people, and they think that you're supposed to go over what happened. But you can't, in good conscience, say, I don't think anybody can say, and there's no purpose to that in the future. The entirety of feedback is about the future. And I think people don't get that because they think that they're talking about the past. But the purpose of feedback is not to get agreement about the past. I mean, most modern people who talk about feedback act as if it's true, even though when you talk to them about it, oh, yeah, I know. I'm trying to get them to do better. Of course, whenever I say feedback, they're always thinking negative. We don't mean that. But even when you give positive feedback is about the future too. Because a conversation about what happened in the past is dead. If that's all we're doing, if all we're doing is extricating the past, then okay, great. But there has to be a purpose beyond that because we can't change the past. So the dialogue model attempts to recreate the past. Let's talk about what happened. Let's talk about what you were thinking, about what your intent was, about what you know and what you did and why. Analyzing it and dissecting it. But look, the purpose of all feedback, both negative and positive, despite what everybody seems to think. In fact, many people say, oh, feedback can't be positive. There's feedback, and then there's praise. I said, okay, you don't get it at all. I mean, praise and feedback are two, even if you compare praise and negative feedback, they're two completely different things. People still believe that praise improves performance when, in fact, it doesn't. So the purpose of all feedback, positive or negative, is to encourage effective behavior in the future. Remember now, if I'm giving Mike feedback, guys, whether it's positive or negative, I'm not going to do the thing he's going to do. Let's say he made a mistake and I'm thinking about him doing it again in the future and I want to get it right. I want him to get it right. Or he did something right and I want him to get it right again. It's not my behavior that's at issue. But as the manager, I'm obligated to give the feedback. The organization expects me to give performance communication, which we call this performance communication, but people tend to call it feedback and then they diminish that into just negative. And they don't realize that they don't think through the logic of the scenario that we put managers in, that I'm talking to Mike about what he's going to do in the future. And I can only encourage. I can't mandate. I can't prohibit. I mean, managers think they can prohibit, but Napoleon said it best, never prohibit what you cannot prevent. And because Mike's a free actor, and because I trust him, he's going to do his work on his own without my looking over his shoulder in the future. So the smart manager knows that the purpose of feedback is to encourage effective behavior in the future. Now, effective behavior is, if it's negative feedback, you're encouraging something different. If it's positive feedback, you're encouraging much the same thing. And our point is that guidance whose purpose is the analysis of the past is too far afield from the purpose of feedback, the future, to be effective. Now look, I'm not arguing, folks, that analysis of the past simply can't be helpful. I know it can. And it's funny how people want to accuse sometimes some of the things we recommend as micromanagement. And here are these managers essentially wanting to get inside the heads and motivations of directs about something in the past, which we can't change. Now, managers say, well, I'm teaching. Actually, it's not your job. And actually, you're not. Do you remember your teachers going over all your mistakes? Actually, they probably didn't do it that much. And more likely, they taught you stuff first and your mistakes came when you got tested. So you're not really teaching. I'm not against teaching, but negative feedback is not teaching and dialogue is not teaching. And look, if you start giving your directs more feedback, positive and negative, your direct can very likely do their own analysis, their own, I hate to say root cause analysis, we're going to talk about that in a minute. If you give them feedback often enough, or in some cases you give them feedback, and then if they need help, you can say, hey, do you need help? Okay, and then you can give them help. But this idea that we need to analyze all their mistakes, and there are some managers who don't know that they're not supposed to, and some managers believe that because of this movement toward dialogue, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to dialogue. I don't think you realize. I think too many frontline managers fail to realize that their directs don't look forward to those dialogues. And many managers say, yeah, they kind of get defensive. Yeah, they do. In many cases, that's because the manager hasn't done the parallel task of building trust so that it's not seen as if I'm the one with role power and I'm going to analyze what you did in the past because, and by the way, we only do that for things they made mistakes on, right? We don't do the analysis. We don't do the dialogue for things they did well. So on some occasions, you can ask people if they need help, but you can give feedback in 5 or 10 seconds and then allow them to use that feedback to make up their own minds because we don't want to micromanage. Micromanaging is dumb. And then if they need help after another instance, perhaps, of negative feedback, you can say, hey, do you need some help? Which is fine because I've been there, man. I tried stuff a couple of different ways. It didn't work and I'm happy to help. But the helping is not, let's review everything you've done and what you've thought and what you've believed and what you've felt.
That's usually not considered
help. Hey, try this. Or have you thought about this? Maybe this.
Yeah, now you're solving all their problems for them.
Exactly. Yeah, and we've talked about that before. Talking about the past, which is what dialogue is intended to do, isn't all it's cracked up to be. And it's being popularized right now. And that's why we're having this cast.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I think one thing that folks do that is very similar to kind of dissecting the past is asking their direct for all the reasons why they did the wrong thing that they did, right?
It's
kind of like trying to get in their head again. Like, why'd you do that? Like,
yeah.
How can you be such a, why are you so dumb?
And if you haven't really worked hard on your trust, asking why you did that is essentially an accusation.
There you go. That's certainly how it feels, for sure.
Now, everyone that I say that to says, oh no, I'm not accusing anybody. I said, I'm not saying you're accusing. I'm telling you how it feels to be a direct of yours when you ask somebody, why did you do what you did? They say, well, okay. I said, did your boss do that to you? No, he doesn't. I said, so you probably don't know. Anyway, many proponents of replacing a short version of feedback, a frequent performance communication model, which is what all great organizations have, The ones that want to replace it with dialogue encourage us managers to probe the reasons why our direct engage in whatever behavior produced the wrong results, and that's a mistake. Again, I mean, I sound old because I am, and I've been doing this for 30 years. The purpose of your feedback is to encourage effective future behavior. Now, look, again, guys, this isn't an opinion. I didn't make this up. That's century-old fundamental managerial principles. Now, don't ask purveyors of dialogue, feedback dialogue, constructive dialogue, what their purpose is. You'll get 100 different answers. And look, no offense. I try to be respectful of people who have different points of view, but a lot of it is filled with psychobabble. They're about encouraging a flexible mind. These are all direct quotes from recent articles I wrote that I finally read so many of them. I just said, I have to say something about this because people are believing this because it's on the internet, so it has to be true. Or talking to your directs to address the difficulties they're facing. Or another one, connecting with purpose. I'm sorry, I struggle with that. I mean, I got to tell you, most managers do want to connect with their directs and do think when they're talking to them, they're doing it with a purpose. So to exhort them to connect with purpose, it's like telling people, be nice. The vast majority of people say, yeah, I'm nice. And the problem with that, of course, is the word be. If you want someone to be more nice than they already are, you have to point out specific things that they can do that will cause them to be perceived as more nice. Look, your organization probably says a lot of these kinds of things in press releases, but it's not what your organization cares about, folks. When we talk about the past, we're in the wrong time zone. When we ask for a direct's reasons, we're aiming at the wrong target. Because look, your directs have good reasons. You have good reasons. I think we already asked the question, have you made a mistake recently and did you intend for it to go bad? Of course you didn't. But now, they have good reasons. You then ask them to point out their reasons. They're not going to point out all the wrong reasons. Maybe they had 5 reasons and 4 of them were good and 1 of them was bad, but they thought it was good. But now your direct has at top of his or her mind all of the good reasons he or she had for the action he or she took that produced an ineffective or inefficient result. And what we found when we did stuff like this is this dialogue about rationale will strengthen the direct's belief that she was right because she had good reasons. I had 5 good reasons. I know it turned out bad, but look, I have 5 reasons. That matters. What they'll start doing, and this is not something that people naturally get, in part because of how we see other people and how we think about ourselves, people start to confuse their intent with action. And then also action with results. And directs say, I had good reasons, so it should be okay. But it's not okay. In fact, if you had good reasons and you had good action, which I'm thrilled to see, and the results didn't turn out good, I'll be happy to give you credit for your actions being good and your intent being good, but the results are what matter. You had good reasons and it turned out bad. And your good reasons are not an excuse to keep doing that. Your good action is not an excuse to keep doing that if, in fact, the results are bad. Look, don't get me wrong, guys. Intent is valuable. And actions matter. But results are what counts. So you've got to be careful about talking with your direct about their reasons. Now, look, we don't have any data on this because this wasn't a popular thing. It was never even considered 20 years ago, but we have seen it often. The direct believes the discussion is about their justifications and not the necessity of their different future behavior. Because again, all feedback, all performance communications, all is about future behavior.
God, what a waste of time if every feedback discussion is about the direct justifying why they did what they did.
I submit the simple thing. If your boss has some negative feedback for you, do you want her to take 15 seconds or 2 minutes? Do you want a chance to plead your case? Or do you just want your boss to say, hey, that didn't work out well. Let's try something different next time.
Yeah, roger that.
Right, exactly. Folks, we've made a change to how we deliver training to clients these days. And you should know if you're somebody who could potentially purchase some client training, or if you're an individual. Now, if you attend client training that we deliver virtually, you'll get a personal license. Previously, we had you got access to roadmap, but you didn't get an access to a license. We've since discovered that there's so much demand for a license and all that goes with it that we decided we would include it. And so we hope you'll be able to come to some client training if you haven't been to a public conference and your company chooses to engage with us, and then you'll get a personal license and all that that entails. Hope to see you.
Now, let's talk about root cause analysis. You mentioned it several times. But root cause analysis and feedback.
I love root cause analysis, by the way. I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get email from Silicon Valley about this one. But
yeah, it's okay. I'm as geeky as they are, so that's okay.
I love it. I mean, when you do a good root cause analysis, it's fun. You're like, oh my gosh, there's our assumption that went wrong.
Right? Oh, it is awesome. It's fun. It's rewarding. I love it.
Yeah.
Business process reengineering. I love the details. But oh my God, if every time I need to get feedback to one of my treks, we're going to have that conversation?
Yeah. Now, I think there are an awful lot of managers who push back on our model of feedback because, well, I want to do root cause analysis. And I get that. Root cause analysis is way too strong a tool to be using it for all the times you should be giving small bits of positive and negative feedback. And before you guys write me and you think this is all about negative, I just want to tell you that you have that in your head, but you don't. It's not in my head. It's not in my heart. Our guidance is shoot for 9 bits of positive feedback for every 1 bit of negative. What you'll discover is people start begging for negative. And when your people start begging for negative feedback, you're in a completely different ballgame where they're going to be eager to hear it and want to adjust. But there is a particular strain of dialogue feedback. And I didn't connect these two. I thought of root cause analysis as a scientific tool. And it's a powerful tool. We both love it. But it has gotten lumped into this dialogue conversation because when you do a root cause analysis with one of your directs, you're in an extended discussion about what happened, right? And it's particularly true of technical and engineering managers and our experienced software developers, software development managers, especially so in root cause analysis.
Well, I got a sledgehammer. It's really, really effective.
Yeah.
So why don't I just use it on the little stud nail?
Look, they're absolutely great reasons for it. There are many managers whose jobs require it, and they're good at it, and they enjoy it. And in fact, not only do they enjoy it, it's joyful. I mean, it feels good, and you're teaching as well, and you're helping, hopefully, the direct see how they can apply it themselves in the future. Manager digs through a problem, sometimes with a direct, maybe more than one direct or a team, and they determine what really and truly went wrong, where the assumptions were, where the bad data was, where the bad act was. And it determined, and I, when I've done it, when I've been a part of it, it's really determined and fundamental the way it's done. And in many roles, software development is a good example. It takes skill and insight and diligence to truly isolate and identify a problem. Now look, at a very simplistic level, the rationale for feedback and root cause analysis are similar. Now, again, negative feedback. Something went wrong, and it needs to be fixed for the future. And root cause analysis and feedback can feel similar, but they are very different. Root cause analysis, by definition, is a detailed review of past actions. It's specifically focused on isolating the original offense to the system and then trying to correct it. But feedback is most assuredly not that. It is about future behavior. In fact, the manager, to some degree, doesn't care why you did what you did. And too many managers, in fact, do care why, because again, they think they can swim upstream and find the offending thought, idea, intent, motivation, emotion, whatever, and solve it there. And then, you know, suddenly all your problems will be gone and profits will flow like a clear mountain stream. And it doesn't, because things are more complicated than that. Feedback is, to some degree, I don't care what your intent is. I'll tell you why. Because I love you. Because I care about you. Because I know you have good intent. Because I hired you. Because you're a good person and you do good things all the time. And I comment to you on the good things you do all the time. And in this particular case, I know you had good thoughts. I know you had an action that made sense to you. And unfortunately, for things you couldn't foreseen, or I didn't tell you, or something has changed, it turned out that the result was not good. To some degree, actions don't matter. Intents don't matter. Motivations don't matter. Assumptions don't matter. Results matter. And this is why feedback is the way you can start having a different thought about how to give feedback is to think of it as being about future behavior. But far too many hardware and software and regular engineering managers approach far too many situations as opportunities for root cause analysis. Now, I'm going to tell you again, guys, we love root cause analysis. I don't want you to stop doing it. I want you to think of it, as Mike said, as a really big hammer, as opposed to a tiny tack hammer. And frankly, you know, I've heard it called a really big hammer, and maybe we ought not to be using hammers as a model here, as an analogy, right? You don't have time to do a true root cause analysis, one that you'd be proud of, that somebody could take a video of and teach it as an object lesson, for all the times that people make mistakes. Most subordinate mistakes or errors in every field, technical or otherwise, are opportunities for feedback and not for root cause analysis. Now, I think what we get sometimes when I'm in Silicon Valley and elsewhere when I'm talking to technical people is, well, wait, what about root cause analysis? And I tell them every time, I said, I love root cause analysis. I want you to do it. I just want you to do it one out of every 50 times and not one out of one times, because you can't do that. You can't, simply can't do that. If somebody's late with a deliverable, and I don't mean to overstress lateness as an example, but if somebody's late with a deliverable, you don't do a root cause analysis of that. You ask them to do better next time, and they have to think through what they're going to do differently in order to meet their deadlines. And hopefully, if they can't figure out how, they come to you and say, I'm struggling. And I say, great, let's talk about it. One-on-one, or next 5 minutes, or in a half an hour when I come out of this meeting. Now, look, my experience is this tendency towards RCA, root cause analysis, versus feedback is based on a combination of things. One of the big things is software engineering managers, where I hear it a lot, used to be software engineers, and still themselves do software engineering. And in their world, and I'm sorry to say this, guys, but technical prowess and better coding skills are much more prized than managerial skills. So the manager is drawn towards root cause analysis rather than a more expedient, more managerial, more effective in the long run, and, you know, delivery of feedback. Feedback is small beer, but a lot of small beer, and you're fine. But if you had a world where you got as much feedback as you deserved, good and bad, there would be much less need for root cause analysis. And if all you have is root cause analysis, you either apply it to everything or you only apply it to the things that it's required to be applied to, bigger problems, and then you leave a slew of things that could be made better. Or if you're not giving positive feedback, you're missing out on telling your people how proud you are of them, and you're not giving them a chance to continue to grow, both on the positive and negative side. So there are two fundamental reasons to choose feedback over root cause analysis in the vast majority of situations. Look, first is time. You don't have time to do root cause analysis as often as you want. If it's your go-to tool, you'll be using it a lot, and you won't have time for anything else. Again, most mistakes, most errors, most failures, most misses, most delays are smaller and better served by a 10-second or 15-second interaction. Now, for those of you who are worried that a 15-second interaction might be harsh, I've been doing it for 30 years, and nobody says it's harsh. Why? Because we've built relationships. You have to have that. That's the foundation. Second, when you help your direct solve their problem, this is going to be hard for some people, you incentivize them to bring you your problem, bring you their problems. Problems in organizations are best solved at the level where they were created. Yes, of course, sometimes you need to help. I agree. But I want to be clear, it's not what you're paid for. Root cause work is heavy lifting, and it's just not called for in most situations. And you have to be careful about spending too much time analyzing your direct failures. When engineering managers tell me, We can't use feedback. We use root cause analysis. That's like saying, I don't want a bike. I already have a tank. Different scope, different scale, different cost, different results. And look, never use a tank to run an errand. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't have a tank. If you want one, they're great. Tanks are great.
Yeah, they're nice. Yeah, having driven one, they're really cool.
Yes, me too.
They're good.
An Abrams, named after the grandfather, named after the father of our classmate, Bruce Abrams. But again, the vast majority of work around the office is errands, not warfare. So, don't get me wrong, guys. Please don't write. Yeah, you can. You can always write mail to me, mahorstman@manager-tools.com, and I'll be happy to reply to everybody within 24 hours. Unless you send me a screed, in which I might just say, okay, I don't have to reply to that, but I will reply. But don't write to me and tell me I said something not true or not helpful about root cause analysis. We love it. We use it. It's just a tank when what you need is a bicycle.
There you go.
So we're done.
Yeah.
We're done. I think we kept this to 30 minutes or so. So let me sum up. let me try. No, there's too much. Let me sum up. Having a dialogue with your directs when they make a mistake is misguided guidance. In my opinion, it's classic pandering without any basis in the realities of the difficulties of being a manager today and the time and money and constraints. We know you're busy, folks. You don't have time for a dialogue. You'll stop giving feedback. And forget about the purposes and principles, which we covered ad nauseum here. A dialogue with your directs won't work. It makes people feel good, but it won't work. And it misleads and ill serves your directs. Don't do it.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
That's it. Finally, four parts.
Love it. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week, this time with a new topic.
New topic, definitely. Right. Probably more about feedback.
Oh, there you go. All right, my friend.
Take care, partner.
Thanks, everyone. So long.